I'm Alex Green. Welcome to Stereo Embers, the podcast. Check this out.
Extend the situation to a broad one instead of the cell. How can we not extend a hand into the perilous waters of hell? Throw your arms around me before the waves all swallow me. I cannot breathe. Put your arms around me. I've come too far.
That's the sound of Maximo Park, and my guest today is the singer of that band, Paul Smith. We sat down for a chat about the band's new album, Risk to Exist, among other things. Now, Maximo Park, what can I tell you about this band that you don't already know? Well, I got a couple things. Okay, number one, they were James Joyce's favorite band. Number two, Germany's Angela Merkel once referred to them as edgy, angular, and downright sexy. And they were the house band in the cantina scene in Star Wars. So there you go. Three things you probably didn't know about Maximo Park. Why? Well, because none of those things are true. I made them up. But let me tell you some things about Maximo Park that are true. They've been around since 2000. They formed in Newcastle. Their debut album, A Certain Trigger, sold about 300,000 copies and was nominated for the Mercury Prize. The band's name, Maximo Park, is taken from Maximo Gomez Park in Miami. They are the first band to ever play the Ibiza Rocks Festival. They've played all over the world. They have a huge fan base in China, and they've recorded a bunch of albums, the new one, Risk to Exist, being their sixth. It was actually recorded in Chicago at Wilco's The Loft Studio, and the album is about the dire state of the world and the crumbling political landscape. Cheery stuff, I know, but hey, it's the truth. There's a lot of terrible stuff going on out there. Donald Trump, Brexit, that new Taylor Swift single. You get the idea. I had a chat with Paul Smith. He's the singer of Maximo Park, and he's a very pleasant guy to talk to. Very smart, very thoughtful, and very introverted in many ways. Now, if you see Maximo Park play live, that may not make sense to you, because Paul Smith is one of the truly great extroverted performers out there. The guy is swinging around, he's dancing, he's climbing things. He is the kind of performer you can't take your eyes off. He just has charisma to burn. But when you chat with him, he's very circumspect, he's thoughtful, and calm. Very different from the whirling dervish of a frontman that he is on stage. And that's something we get into. We start talking about how the way you present yourself to the public is incredibly different to the person that you are among your family and your friends. As a matter of fact, Paul says, "Oh, I'm just a boring, normal guy." But he's not. He's not a boring, normal guy. But in comparison to the Maximo Park persona that he puts on stage, he's a much different guy than the person you see. And the conversation is really interesting and technical, because he really breaks down the necessary need to be that person on stage so he can be the person he really is off stage. And the most important thing is that those two personas don't meet, because if they do, there's a massive disconnect that can happen to a performer. And Paul has a really, really great way to keep those things separate, and he explains it. It's a really cool conversation. I really like talking to him. I love Maximo Park. I love their new record. And speaking of records, he had just gotten back, Paul Smith, from record shopping here in San Francisco at Amoeba Music on the Hate. So I wanted to find out what was in his bag. Okay, this is Paul Smith and I breaking it down right here on Stereo Embers, the podcast.
I got On Leaving, which is an album by Nina Nastasia, who is one of my favourite singers, and it's one of my favourite records. So I bought it on a CD originally, and I just thought it would be nice to have it on record, and it's also a really nice sleeve as well. So it's that's a good one. And I got Andrei Tarkovsky's first film, which I can't remember what that one's called now. And I bought a classical CD, Henrik Górecki Symphony, and a Kath Bloom record. Kath Bloom's a kind of, I don't know whether you've heard of her, but she's sort of folky singer, quite bleak. But yeah, Henrik Górecki's Symphony Number 3, Kath Bloom. Which one is it? It's a new one, which is on Mark Kozelek's record label, actually. It's called Thin Thin Line. And yeah, Ivan's Childhood is the Tarkovsky film. So it's been a good day in Amoeba.
That's a sophisticated bag there, Paul.
You said it, not me.
I just bought the new Noel Gallagher. Now I feel stupid.
No, there's nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah, your bag is better than mine. and your new record is better than mine. I love your record, man. I love Thanks. This album so much.
Thank you. We tried to make something that was very accessible, even though you can look at it as an album made in dark times, politically speaking, all over the world. But yeah, we wanted to make something that was very enjoyable to listen to. So that the more thoughtful side of it didn't become too dominant. So I think it having played it last night and playing it just for the whole year since it came out, people seem to really get into the groovier elements of it. And you know, it's still a pop record, but I think we were trying to see what we could do with pop music, as we always do on each record, and see which way we can bend it this time.
By far your grooviest album to date, would you agree?
I would agree, yes. We tried to make a groovy record on our third record, and I don't think it was that groovy.
I like that record. That's a good record.
They're all, you know, offspring, and therefore, you know, they all mean a lot to me. But I think the rest of the band are less keen on that one, because we were trying to do something groovier, and it's quite rigid, really. That we used kind of arpeggiated things and things that were perhaps a little bit more mechanistic. And even though we played it quite live, that record, it didn't come across like that. And although I think it's a good record, you leave a few stones unturned, which you can always pick up on in the future. And for this record, we wanted to record it live and to show people what kind of a band we are at the moment, which is pretty flexible, really. You know, we've got our friend Paul Rafferty plays the bass on the new record, and I think that allows us the room to be a bit funkier. He has quite a different style from our original bassist Archers, and Duncan played a bit of bass on the last record, and he's a very melodic bass player. I think because we've been playing together for the last, I don't know, 5 years or so as a unit, having him on the record and meant that we could write funkier stuff, even though he wasn't necessarily involved too much in the writing process. We knew that if we did write something funky, we'd be able to nail it in the studio, because our rhythm section has become a tight unit over the last few years. So yeah, I think even though we've always liked funky stuff, you know, we've never been the meters, let's put it that way. But this is this is heading towards that, a little nod towards some of the things that we like. And I think we've always been quite a soulful band, in a way. You know, the lyrics are very emotional, but hopefully not too angsty. And you know, some of my favourite singers are Otis Redding and Aretha Franklin and singers who sing from the heart. And so yeah, I think you could probably pick up on a few more of those influences on this record.
Well, you know, it's funny. I saw Duran Duran a couple of years ago at the Fillmore in San Francisco, and I watched them and I thought, these guys are a funk band, because their bass player is, he's pretty phenomenal. But you take him away and they're not a funk band anymore. Yeah. So I wonder if the secret is that sort of that bassist ingredient. I don't really know. Maybe just simplicity. I'm not sure why the groove works so well when it does. But do you think that it has something to do with the bass?
Well, I think absolutely. I think that's a big part of what we do. But I think you also alluded to it in your question. There's a more minimal approach to what we're doing. It was, apart from Respond to the Feeling, the penultimate track, which is programmed by Dunk, our guitar player. The rest of it was recorded live in the studio. We used the original track and recorded a few extra things in the studio for that one song. But the rest of it's just us in the studio. And rather than having us all go in hell for leather, which is essentially what many of our other songs on our other records are, you know, there's I'll pick one, for example, something like The Coast Is Always Changing.
Okay.
It's not breakneck speed, but there's a guitar melody, there's a keyboard melody, and then there's the vocal over the top mirroring some of the guitar stuff, but doing its own thing as well. And we've always been quite simple yet technical in the drum department. I can say that because I'm not the drummer. I think Tom, our drummer, is amazing, and he's always listening out for inflections in my vocal where he can add a little fill in. He's a great drummer. So from our point of view, there has been a lot going on. Whereas on this record, the opening beat of the record is on the song "What Do We Do to You to Deserve This?" is just a simple, straight up, funky beat, and no frills. And again, the guitar does what it needs to do. Sometimes when we're playing live, I've noticed that, you know, even though I hadn't really analyzed it before, I'll look over and Dunk isn't playing until the bridge to the chorus, or Lucas isn't playing over the intro. Whereas before we'd sort of count four and off we went. And that was, I mean, that's part of our identity, you know, sonically speaking, it's part of who we are. And I think, you know, we've done that numerous times, and we will always be able to employ those tactics that feel very us. But we can also move away from it and go, right, okay, let's not do that. Like when we started, we tried to have no guitar solos and no excessive elements. We wanted to be economic and lean and punchy. And I think, you know, as you get older, you think, wow, well, let's just have a guitar solo there. let's not be so rigid. And with every record, you then investigate other avenues. And so for me, this new record, I think, yeah, just it's the band that we are when we're just playing in the studio. And it is quite a playful record, I think. It's meant to be fun. And I think the danceability of it is one of the fun elements of it.
What is it about that rigidity that comes early on in a band's career, where no guitar solos and no this and only that? And where does that come from, do you think? And then why do we let it go? Do we let it go because we realize it was silly and there's nothing indulgent about a guitar solo? Those are cool.
Yeah, totally. I think what we were trying to do was mark ourselves out from the crowd. And if there were things that other people were doing, for example, when we first started out, there was a lot of bands with acoustic guitars, and it was very soft and quite mellow, and we didn't feel like that necessarily. And although I love listening to whatever, you know, Neil Young or a James Taylor record, when I was growing up, I still thought, this, what do I feel now at the age that I am, in the place that I am, and how should we express ourselves as musicians and as a band? And we were kind of, I suppose, kicking against some of that other stuff. Again, not necessarily because it was bad, just because it was there. And there's lots of facsimiles appear after something successful or well done. And so we tried to come up with something a little bit different, a bit more aggressive, a bit more, as I was saying, economic. And I think in the end, you end up finding that there are other bands who are also reacting against the same thing, and then you can quite easily be pigeonholed with those other bands. And so then you move away from it and you try and get away from your original sound. And then you also come to a realization at some point, sooner or later, where you think, well, this is us, and we shouldn't try and get away too far from it. I think when we were making our fourth record, we did some demos, and we were, you know, we were going into My Bloody Valentine territory ever so slightly, you know, that it was still a song-based, but, you know, we were trying to go further and further out. And we just, it just ended up feeling like it wasn't us, although we thought it was cool. You know, oh, that's a cool sound. That sounds great. That sounds just like this. It just didn't feel like we were necessarily living up to our own identity. And I think that's, you know, all of, certainly the earlier parts of our lives, we're searching for our identity. And even, you know, step away from music, you hear of people having midlife crises and, you know, people forge an identity for themselves, and it may not necessarily be who they are. And they might want to reassess that at some point, and they can do. And, you know, life is in, you know, more interesting when it's varied. And I think it's good to set some rules for yourself and some boundaries and define who you are as opposed to other things, because otherwise you'll end up sounding like something that already exists and probably a pale imitation of it. Certain bands are trying to reach you know, a goal and transcend it and become totally different from what they, you know, meant to sound like. I don't know, like a band like the Stooges. It you know, they're trying to sound like other kind of garage bands, and you know, they just turned everything up way louder and ended up having their own completely unique sound, and then other bands then try and imitate them. And so it's always a search for identity when you're in a band. And you know, we try and have fun and try and enjoy it, because music is an enjoyable thing, but there is a side of us that's quite serious about it, that is trying to find something something more in and something more from yourself. There's a song of ours called Questing Not Coasting, which is almost like a mission statement, really. The opening lines of that song, it says, "Questing, I am not coasting, nor will I ever, despite this weather." And whatever the weather might be, whether it's bad weather or good weather, the listener can choose. But yeah, you know, rather than going with the prevailing winds, you have to try and forge your own path and find ways to make music that expands on what you've done before. And yeah, I think we've definitely tried not to throw the baby out with the bathwater every time that we've changed musical styles. But it is essential for us to evolve. And I think when bands don't evolve, the listener and perhaps the band themselves realize that, and things get very boring indeed.
So one of the unwritten rules for bands starting out is that whatever rules you write, you can scrap all the rules later on.
Right? Absolutely. That's art. And that's it. You know, we believe in pop as an art form, you know, as something that can change your day, as well as being something that's kind of flippant and fun. And for us, that, like, you know, that's when I was at art college or whatever, it was, you were always trying to find new things, and sometimes you ripped up what you'd done and started again. And I think that's a good motto.
Well, if you look at the Beatles, I mean, that was not a very long career, but the evolution artistically, what they were doing, is kind of astounding. When you think about the White Album compared to I Want to Hold Your Hand, that's an insane amount of growth. So when you look back at the first record that you guys put out, compared to this one, there is a real arc. I mean, there's a real evolution in your band.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, this is the thing. We have always tried to think of things in a long-term way, as well as trying to make sure that each record was good. Just, you know, if nobody bought the records, we may not be able to do it for a living, but we would still try and evolve with each record and try new things out, because this is it. You know, you want to enjoy what you're doing and you don't want to stagnate. And I feel like there are certain threads that run through the whole band, but yeah, the new record does not sound like the older records, and yet you would still be able to tell it was us in some way. And I think we really learned that on the last record. We made too much information with the idea that, okay, every song is probably going to sound quite different from the other one, and that's okay. You know, we've always, before that, we tried to find perhaps more unity with and make an album statement in some way. But we, you know, we've always thought of them almost like 12 or 13 singles, you know, quite standalone things. Otherwise, you feel like you might let the quality drop. If you're just writing something, you're like, yeah, this is going to be an album track. That's not necessarily a good thing, especially not with our band. You know, the way that we write is it is informed by pop music. It's informed by pop structures. Even though we try and do something quite alternative and different with this, it's, you know, it's born out of that love of the tradition and simplicity and trying to find a different way of doing it and something that will perhaps make people think twice the first time that they listen to it. But yeah, I think you know, the latest record has songs where, you know, I didn't even know what they were going to sound like when we got to Chicago to record it. Songs like The Hero and Make What You Can on the record, they're sort of more epic in a way than and not in a pompous way, but they have a different kind of feel completely to the songs that we used to write, which were snappier in their own way. These ones have a snap to them, but they're not trying to be as catchy as possible, which is another thing that's part of our trademark sound.
Editors add it up in the books, will you keep them at bay? You forgot to censor yourself with your limited brain, and there's a look upon your face that says that you can't take the strain. What's that look upon your face? No, this is not the good old days. What? Natural, I'd say, but then you trample over the less well off and downtrodden this day. You forgot to mention the fact that inequality remains an opportunity, really knocks if your background is viewed with disdain. What's that look upon your face? No, this is not the good old days.
I know you're an athlete, and I know that I know there's a drive and there's a competition that comes from that is totally organic, that you know, an athlete understands. So do you find that you are, when you write, do you challenge yourself against yourself? Do you think, what are those other people doing, and let's see if I can do it better? Or where does that come from?
A little bit. I think, you know, I can be quite a competitive person. you know, that is part of who I am, and it's part of my family in a way. You know, you kind of, as you get older, you're like, well, I was always brought up to be quite competitive. And I think that certainly served us well when we were first starting out, because we wanted to blow other people away.
Right.
We were so eager to be out there and to compete with other sounds, because there's a lot of competition for your attention as a listener. And it's the same with, you know, dressing up and putting on a performance and not being shy about that, even though I might be, you know, broadly speaking, kind of on the more introverted side, you know, an introspective, generally speaking. I still, you know, there's a side of me that loves to perform. There's a side of me that loves to show off our band, because I believe in it. And I think if I didn't believe in it, it would be impossible for me to get on stage and do what I do. And it's, you know, it's the same when you go on a football pitch. If you don't believe in yourself, you're going to get ignored. You're going to be sidetracked. You won't do well for the team. you know, it's, you know, for us, that there's got to be a drive and an ambition. And I think a lot of bands, when they do well, or however, whatever they consider making it, or whatever success is to them, once it's achieved, they switch off and they're just on autopilot to a certain extent. And I find that an insult to music, to making music. It's an insult to the listener. And there's there's personally speaking, a drive to make each record as good as the last one. I'd like to think they are pretty solid in terms of their consistency. You know, it's not a very cool word, and it's not a very it's not something that people are going to be excited about putting in a review or whatever. Band is consistent, but hopefully, you know, we started out at a quite a high level for us. You know, we tried to refine ourselves before we even put out a record or even played too much outside of Newcastle. We wanted to hone what we were doing and hone our craft. And many bands that I admire have that sort of similar consistency, where they perhaps go a little bit under the radar. But if you listen to one of their records, you'll hear something that you'll enjoy from that record. People like the Go-Betweens, for example, one of my favorite bands, where, you know, there's probably a classic, Liberty Bell and the Black Diamond Express, and that's the one that gets mentioned in sort of lists and that kind of thing, and rightly so, because it is probably pound for pound their best record. But to me, I don't, music's not a competition, and that's the other side of my reply when we talk about that competitive instinct. You know, the part of my other more artistic side of me is constantly saying, well, Nick Drake was ignored during his lifetime, and, you know, that doesn't make any sense.
You name check the Go-Betweens and Nick Drake, who are both two very introverted bands, and you did acknowledge that you have an introverted side. How do you balance the two? Because I imagine, you know, being on stage, you're giving so much to people. You know, and an introvert gets their energy kind of pulled from them. I sound like you're a psychiatrist now, but certainly, you know, your energy gets pulled by other people in other places. It doesn't mean that you're a quiet person. It just means that you're susceptible to having your energy taken in social situations. So I wonder, for you, how you reconcile, because you give so much and you're an artist, but you have that introverted side where you do listen to Nick Drake. The Go-Betweens are one of the most beautiful, subtle pop bands. So it's interesting. You mentioned, you know, like for example, Mark from Sun Kill Moon, like that's some very subtle, dark, poetic stuff. So how do you balance the introversion with the extroversion as well?
Well, I think it's that definitely extroversion comes in the performance, and not just in the performance on stage, the performance on the record. You know, I've got to try and get people to understand what the songs are about, and the introverted side of me is the person who's writing the lyrics. And so the lyrics between the writing and the performance of them, I've got to try and find the emotion that's behind them, and hopefully that comes out in my voice. Hopefully people can hear it. It's one of the things that other people have noticed, because I just try and sing from the heart. You know, I try and sing as best I can. And, you know, that's what I've always done. I mean, I listen back to our first record every now and then to remember some lyrics or whatever, if we're going to play a song. And the singing is pretty poor, I would say. I think it's a badly sung record, which is a shame, because it's a good record otherwise. And by the time of our second record, I'd been singing for a year on tour, and I felt like, right, this sounds like me. For whatever reason, my voice had developed a bit more, and yet people still said about that first record, you know, you can hear the emotion in your voice, I can connect with this. And so from day one, that's the thing that I've been searching for. Even though I might not be the best singer in the world, you're trying to express yourself, and you're trying to connect with other people. And luckily we've connected with other people, and then you know, once you get on a stage, you've got to connect with somebody at the back of a room, as well as the people down the front who are really on board with what you're doing for a start. And they get the added bonus of being up close and being able to see the way that you feel and the way that your face is moving and that kind of thing, just your expression. And so to get to people at the back of the room, you have to amplify things a little bit. And if you're on a festival stage or something like that, and people are wandering past, you know, perhaps if you've got a distinctive look, people can then go, oh yeah, that looks pretty interesting, I'll go and see what this is. And then they'll remember you. So it's something that, you know, you're always trying to reconcile as a performer. Some of my favorite singers, people like Elliot Smith, or, you know, there's Low on the record, we've got Mimi Parker from Low, but when you go and see them, she's, you know, quite static, and it's people like Low and Elliot Smith, it was never about performance. It was probably about the intensity of their music making, rather than flamboyant gestures or the way they dress or anything like that. And I think that's equally compelling to somebody who's a fan of music. And I don't think there's one right way of doing things, but I do know that the way that I am, I feel like that's what I need. You know, it's a kind of protection in a way, to kind of dress up and to go a little bit in, you know, over the top and try and shock people a little bit into watching. And to, you know, like last night, for example, we played and it was, you know, it's a Tuesday night, and everybody's feeling pretty relaxed. And quite a few people are there who've never seen you before. And there's a kind of intensity to our performance, which is, you know, it's part of the deal. You know, I don't really have any other way or desire to do things. And I think, you know, people can sometimes be a little bit shocked by that at the start of a concert. And, you know, some people find it quite funny as well. You know, some guy jumping up and down and ranting and raving. I totally understand that.
You mentioned Elliot Smith, and I'm a huge fan of his. I saw him play at the Oscars a couple, you know, maybe it was 15 years ago or something. I can't believe it was this long. And I felt I couldn't watch because it felt too vulnerable. It felt like there was nowhere for him to hide on a stage that big. I almost felt that way with Amy Winehouse too. Like the venues were too big for the music that was so intimate. And so I like that balance that you have in your band, where you have these introspective lyrics that are intensely personal, and the performance of them is, you know, incredibly athletic and big and strong. It's a great balance. You know, yeah, it's cool.
Thank you.
I guess it wasn't much of a question, but it was more of a comment. But I like how you do that, because I think back to that Elliott Smith performance, and I felt kind of horrible for him, because I felt like it was too vulnerable. It was too close to the vein on that one.
Yeah, this is the thing. I don't want to cry on stage. I don't want to be that guy. You know, I think we've found a good way of expressing ourselves. And because I don't play my guitar on stage, I am the front person. There's a certain responsibility that goes with that, but also it kind of sets you free as well, because you can be the conduit for the music. You can be the visual side of it. Even if it's just, you know, looking at the audience, you know, if I had a guitar, I'd be looking down a bit more. It allows me the kind of freedom to put on a performance and yes, to have a kind of a distance as well as this connection, because because it's a performance, there is already an artificial aspect to it. And I think some people try and be, yeah, I'm one of the people, I'm close to the people, but there's this weird stage in front of you, and rather than sort of try and pretend that that's not there, I'd kind of emphasize it and say, right, this is a performance, this is happening, this is hopefully exciting. And I think it allows me to just be more normal when I'm off stage, rather than people, you know, people hopefully don't think that's me on the stage entirely. They know that it's a performance, and that, you know, it gives you a bit of separation somehow from what we do.
What's the danger of making the connection and not having the distance?
It's not right. it's not real, and therefore it would feel disingenuous somehow. You know, I have close relationships with my friends and family, and that's enough for me. You know, I don't need people to be patting me on the back and saying, you're the best, and oh, I had a great time. I want people to have a great time, but I don't need them to tell me that. And I think, yeah, it's making a slightly side issue of it. But yeah, I think, you know, sometimes when people feel things very intensely, things can get pretty weird quite quickly.
Well, right.
And I think that's where some people come a cropper. We're not a massive group, so it's not really a big issue, but it's still, you know, some people have taken things too far over the years, I don't encourage that kind of thing, really. It's I'm there to do what I do, which is perform, and I like the idea of having the role of the performer and the audience. You know, I like being in the audience. I don't want to feel too uncomfortable when I'm in the audience either. You know, I don't want to be necessarily in my comfort zone, but I don't want to feel weird and like the performer is trying to be more than what they are. I think music fulfills its purpose and makes me feel so much that I don't, yeah, you don't need anything extra. And I think, it's interesting that everybody's got a different approach to it. It ends up being, the more famous people get, the more weird it gets, where they're pretending to be just like the person in the audience when they live quite a crazy life, going on private jets and whatnot.
Well, and that's
that's always a bit strange.
Well, yeah, because I imagine for someone like Justin Bieber, who performs under his own name, you know, like for example, when you're performing with your band, you're playing a character, even though it looks like you and it sounds like you. It's an extension of your psyche. It's a bit, And with Justin Bieber, it's under his own name, or anybody else who performs under their own name. It makes me understand why David Bowie used all those masks. But, you know, on stage, all those personas. But for Justin Bieber, I think people actually believe that Justin Bieber's not doing a bit. And I think worst of all is I think Justin Bieber doesn't realize that he's doing a bit. And that's where it becomes really dangerous.
Well, it's also, it's a bit boring as well. You know, David Bowie was just a normal guy. And when you see him in interviews, you know, he's quite funny and very down to earth in his own way. At various points, he was detached from reality.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, you know, especially the older he got, you know, he's just an interesting artist. And the interesting bit is the art, and then the person is the person. You know, you're trying to create something that is bigger than yourself, that is, you know, incredible. You know, I want people to listen to our records and go, that's a brilliant record, that's amazing. I don't want them to say, you're amazing. I don't want them to say, you know, I don't need anything like that. I just want to know that people hear our music and that they're affected by it in some way, that it's not just some bland wallpaper that's just there to try and sell a few more records. It's, you know, something that means something to people, hopefully. But outside of that, you know, I'm quite irrelevant, really. You know, the music, we put everything into the music, and, you know, the same goes for everybody else in the band. You know, we make it and we put it out, and we want people to connect with this. But other than that, we don't require anything else. And I think having an idea that it's a performance and that it is something quite unusual and different makes it more interesting. You know, it's less one-dimensional than if it was kind of guy in jeans gets up and sort of pretends to be just walking down the street. You know, you're on a stage, so perform was always my kind of my idea behind it. But then, you know, as I said, that it, you know, I like lots of people who do just, you know, get on the stage and it's more DIY, but our music's not like that, so it would feel wrong to do that. I think, yeah, it's kind of horses for courses, really. For me, you've got to do what feels right. And to me, putting on a performance and kind of dressing up makes it more of an event, because I'm just a boring guy. So I don't want people to get that impression or to leave with that in their mind. I want people to go, yeah, we saw a performance tonight, and it totally enhanced the music. Otherwise, obviously, you can just listen to it at home, and that's pointless.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
If you go into a concert, you know, you want something extra, whatever that might be. I don't know. You know, for me, I want something extra in terms of I just want to hear it in the room. But with our music, you know, I'm a pretty boring looking sounding person. So to put on a performance and to do something that's a little bit larger than life, then, you know, that to me is something that works for us.
Did you always know that? I mean, is that something that you had to kind of learn, or, you know, because you guys got well known pretty quickly, and you've sorted that out now that we're talking about it, and it sounds great. But so many people, when they're younger, especially, they confuse the thing that they are on stage with something real. Did you always know that? Did you always keep that distance, or is that something that you had to cultivate over time?
I think I knew, but then, you know, you can't be sure about these things. Sometimes you know, it's inevitable that you end up a bit swallowed by the whole thing. And, you know, we still are in the charts, and, you know, a lot of people come to watch us play in England and in Germany and across Europe. And it's, you know, that can alter your perception of yourself. It can alter your perception of reality, really. And you can create your own reality, which a lot of people do in bands. You know, they create some sort of situation that's larger than life, and then off they go. They're living in a bit of a dream world. And that's not really the kind of band we are. You know, the music is about real life. It's about the transcendence of the everyday, you know, doing things that are everyday, but they are amazing as well. You know, and when you consider that, how could I ever be too much of a kind of, you know, you can't really be this kind of big-headed person. You can't really get too far ahead of yourself, because our music is rooted in everyday things and everyday feelings, and it celebrates them and says that they're worth celebrating, that they're they are amazing things. You know, that you know, song that's in my head because we played it last night, Questing Not Coasting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's about somebody comes around somebody else's house or where they're staying in a rainstorm and they look out of the window and that's it. But obviously lots of other things are happening inside, and that's what the song's about. You know, the kind of, there's something resonant about these experiences that we have. And therefore I don't feel like, I've ever gotten too affected by what we're doing, because, you know, it's not how we are, and it's not how we presented ourselves. And, you know, we are talking, and we have been talking about presentation and how you put yourself across, and how do you perceive yourself, and how are you perceived? And I think we're perceived in lots of different ways, stuff that I can't control, stuff that I think is quite negative, I'm sure. But as you know, as long as we remain true to ourselves, that's the most important thing in terms of other people's perceptions, because, you know, I've always been a believer that if you continue to stick to what you're doing and stick to your principles, people will recognize that over time, even if that might be difficult to perceive originally when there's a lot of noise around, and people might just look at a press photo of you when you're just starting out and go, these guys look like idiots, and that's that. They'll never listen to you again. Or I remember I did an interview with a magazine in the UK, which was quite a hip magazine, and they were asking me why we were touring with certain bands, and, you know, bands that they didn't consider cool, and you know, that I didn't really listen to the bands that we were playing with necessarily. Sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. But they were kind of saying, you know, it's a very negative thing, and that, you know, I read the article, which I try not to do these days. Pretty soon after that initial burst of interviews that we did when we first started out, and yeah, it was a very negative article, just kind of saying why do these guys tour with so and so, and it was essentially they'd found us guilty of something. I'm not quite sure what, but it was more by association than what we were doing. They were saying, well, you know, we think you're good, why are you playing with these bands that we think are bad? And my reply was, you know, I want people to hear our music, and where, you know, we've just started out, this, you know, we're trying to get our music to people, and if somebody asks us to play with them, we'll play with them. And I thought that was a pretty basic kind of thing, but it led to quite a negative article about us. And if somebody reads that, they'll go, well, right, I won't listen to them again if they're really into that magazine. And, you know, it's strange to think of these things now, but, you know, we've always tried to stick to being who we are. And that'll, you know, I say that, and it's quite strange because this interview's been about the fact that I'm a performer as well, and that we, you know, we put a lot into that side of things, and yet how does that level with the idea of being yourself? And I think that, you know, I've always tried to be honest in interviews, and again, hopefully people aren't confused by watching me running around on stage and being passionate and being angry and being romantic and being into what I'm doing with something, you know, then you would read an interview and go, well, that doesn't really level with that guy. he seems like quite a normal person. Again, that might put people off. They might want a character all of the time, you know, and you never know what people want from you or require from you. And therefore the best thing to do is to stick to your guns. And hopefully over time people will get a picture of what you're doing, which is a very, you know, most people don't get the chance to do that. You know, their bands don't last. A lot of our contemporaries aren't around anymore. You know, they got dropped by the record label, or they fell out with each other. And by being ourselves and trying not to rest on our laurels and always trying to find this new sense of purpose for the band, I think that is why we still exist. That is why we still feel like we're doing something semi-important, you know, and something that people can get into and enjoy.
And isn't it true that in order to be true to yourself, you have to have first done a little bit of, you know, internal probing, just so you know what's important to you? I mean, people who say, you know, we want to be true to ourselves, you first have to kind of take a kind of inventory. And so you sound as though your interior life has been something you've spent time on. You've thought about these things.
Yeah, I think when we first started out, it was almost like a manifesto. And I don't even know what, I think we put some of it on our very first website that my brother designed for us. And it was all just, you know, photos that I'd taken and photos that the band had taken, and we just posted it all up. And I believe there was a few things on there that were quite, you know, manifesto-like. And that's, yeah, I think before I got on stage with the band, they'd been going for a while and they were quite a tight band and they knew each other. And I'd just come in and they wanted somebody to perform and to be a focal point on stage. And, you know, I did not want to be a cliched sort of guy in a local band, the guy who's got a big ego and therefore he's the singer. You know, I didn't even know if I could sing very well. You know, they'd seen me playing guitar with an instrumental band that I played with. And, you know, that's more my world, really. And I used to be more kind of quite contemptuous of people in indie bands who would be singing in the local pub. It was often, you know, style over substance and people who wanted to be other people, which, although I, you know, we've all got our heroes and that kind of musical inspirations, I never wanted to take that on stage with me. Certainly not in a conscious way. You know, there's definitely people who I look up to as performers that I used as a kind of template when we were starting, and then tried to find a, you know, an amalgamation of all of those things and my own sensibility. And so, yeah, I thought about what we were going to do on stage and how it was going to be. And I still didn't really know until we got up there for our very first gig what exactly was going
to
happen.
It's funny to hear you refer to yourself as a boring person. You don't really think that, do you? I have a hard time imagining that if you're coming to someone's house for dinner and someone goes, "Who's coming over?" "Paul's coming over." "Oh, you mean the boring guy?" I can't see that.
I suppose what I mean is just commonplace, normal. You know,
not crazy.
Like to think I wasn't. I'm glad you say this, but you know, I'd like to think I wasn't boring the pants off people. But on the other hand, yeah, I think I'm more normal than a lot of people who I've met on the road and other performers. And, you know, I can imagine them thinking I was quite boring. or people having certain expectations of you. And, you know, this is the thing. People see me as a performer and then they realize that I'm quite calm in some ways. And whereas if you spoke to people who know me, they'd also say, "No, Paul's not that calm." And that's the side that you can amp up in the performance. But if, you know, if I don't know people, I like being polite. You know, I like I like those kind of social conventions, and you know, I like to be friendly. And you know, I was walking around, just went in a shop today in San Francisco, and the guy, I was just chatting to the guy about what I was doing there, and his, you know, what his daughter was called, and whatever, you know, just I do like interacting with people. I'm not a kind of hermit, but I do like having a bit of time to myself and a bit of space to think, and that's part of who I am. And I feel like sometimes I the things that I think are really interesting, I'm sure lots of people think of either boring or pretentious or whatever, and there might be a few people out there who are my friends and family members who are into the same things, and that's a nice thing to have that special bond with people. And then you know, the rest of the time what I do is pretty mundane, but hopefully not, you know, not too boring. I interest myself in terms of, you know, what I read, and you know, I walk every day and take pictures, and sometimes I do drawings, and sometimes I write lyrics, and you know, that's an activity that is quite specialist, and that I fit, you know, I'm obviously very lucky to be in that position. Most people have normal jobs, and my job, which I throw myself into, is to try and write and to try and be stimulated by the world and to try and look for inspiration everywhere in order to make these songs. And that's a full-time job, but it'd be very difficult to explain that to other people.
The old boys' club has been throwing its weight around. It's been around so long and I'm sick of the sound. If you're gonna say something, better say it loud. Gonna take some counteraction, gonna join the crowd. Myself together, gonna paint the town. I won't be put in my place. I won't be put in my. The hand that giveth is said to taketh away. They strip you of your dignity. They make you work in their ways. They make you work in them. The right wing views have been getting down. Say that work brings dignity, no matter what job they dish out. But the rich start life with a hand-me-down. The wage gap gets bigger, doesn't it make you proud?
There you go. Paul Smith of Maximo Park. Not a boring guy at all. Quite an engaging fellow, and really enjoyed talking to him. You'll enjoy the album Risk to Exist. Get it at MaximoPark.com. As always, thank you for listening to Stereo Embers, the podcast. Next week, Kristen Hirsch will be here, and I'm really looking forward to that chat. She's fantastic. And you know what? So are you. Thank you again for listening, and I will see you next week right here on Stereo Embers, the podcast.